Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host for Hey Boomer. And for those of you who may be joining us for the first time, let me tell you what you can expect from Hey Boomer. It is a show that offers intelligent and entertaining conversations with thought leaders, authors, scientists, performers, and we focus on engaging in life, making a difference, and enhancing our purpose as we age. And our guest today is Francie Heller. And Francie will talk to us about her life, her career, and sustainable investing. So what is sustainable investing? Well, we're going to get into the details of that, but let me give you a high-level description. So it's about investing in progress and recognizing that companies solving the world's biggest challenges can be best positioned to grow. It is about pioneering better ways of doing business and creating the momentum to encourage more and more people to opt in to the future that we're working to create. Sounds pretty awesome. And in our conversation today, like I told you, we are going to be learning about Francie's life. We're going to be learning more about sustainable investment and why it is important and how it can make a difference to your bottom line and to the bottom line of the future. If you have friends that you think will enjoy today's show or any of the shows that we have had or that are coming up, point them to the heyboomer.biz website and ask them to subscribe. In that way, they are going to be on our email list and they will be notified of any of the upcoming shows or events that Hey Boomer is bringing to you. And with that, I want to introduce you to Francie Heller. Hey, Francie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Let me tell them a little bit about you. So Francie was born in Greenville, South Carolina, and she is the daughter of Max and Trudy Heller, who are Holocaust survivors and visionaries for the development of downtown Greenville. And if you haven't been here yet, you need to come see it. At 29, Francie found herself a single mother of four young children, and her determination to provide a good life for her children and herself propelled her on. She began her career as a speech pathologist in the public schools, and then she became the supervisor of special education, and then the director of personnel services, and it was in this role that she first had to manage a budget. And the insight she gained by managing the budget of schools facilitated her move to Wall Street. We're going to learn more about that. And on Wall Street, she built a school investment program at Bear Stearns, from zero to a $30 billion asset management program. Since leaving Bear Stearns, Francie has worked at several other firms and started her own firm, Heller Advisory, which is an alternative asset placement firm connecting best-in-class investment managers to pensions, endowments, and foundations. She also currently works as the director at Arabesque Asset Management USA, a new position for her as a boomer. And she also works with Investment Office Resources as a consultant to provide services for sustainable investing. Francie serves as emeritus on the board of Furman University, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and College Unbound. There's so much more I can say about Francie, but let me get her to tell us about it. So Francie, what I wanted to start with is your history, you know, what it was like growing up as the child of Trudy and Max Heller, and then what propelled you from your school career to Wall Street?
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yes, I grew up in Greenville. My mother and father both were survivors of the Holocaust. They had to leave Vienna. My mother was 15 or 16, my father 18. They had a pretty rough time of it, but they ended up in Greenville, South Carolina, which is a great topic we could talk about another time. It's one of those great stories that could be a movie. A great love story and a great escape story. They both loved being free, being in America, being in Greenville. They were welcomed. And I grew up in a home that was loving and appreciative of all we had and the chances we had to be free and to be in America. I was also lucky when I was 5 years old and we were visiting my grandparents in Long Island to meet a young girl my age. She was five, and she was deaf. And at the time, I said, I want to help her. And so throughout my years of growing up and going to school and high school, I knew that one day I wanted to have something to do with speech and hearing, which is, I guess, great to know that when you're a young person. And so I chose a college to go to that would give me the best program for speech and hearing therapy. And I ended up in Boston University, which was a big, big difference from Greenville, Carolina. But it was great, and I became a speech pathologist. Somewhere in there, I met and married my husband then. My junior year of college, we got married. And as I got my diploma my senior year, I had my first child. And I went from there to University of Georgia, got a master's in speech therapy again and special ed, had my second child. We moved to New York, and lo and behold, I gave birth to twins. So I was 23 years old. I had four children, two and under, living in New York, and somehow knew I had to continue my education, got certified, and got licensed in New York, and unfortunately got divorced when I was 29. And there I was with my four children, but with a degree and my degrees and a love for speech therapy, and went to work in the school districts, which I did for 12 years and also did some private practice. That's kind of my background in the speech and education world.
Okay. And then you moved from that into managing the school personnel or something like that?
So my last position was pupil personnel director. Not only was I managing education, but I realized that I had a $32 million budget to manage. And I found out that school districts were putting their money in the bank, which was very nice and safe. But the bank was only paying 2%, and the interest rates at the time were 10 or 12. So I realized there had to be a better way. I spent the next 2 years while I was in education studying how to invest money, what you do with your investments. I realized that schools joined together for busing, for insurance, for many other things. So I thought, why can't we join together for investing? And so I did a lot of research, and I got together a whole group of school districts, and we sat down and said, how can we make our investing of our tax dollars safer and better and add all the services you need? And then I marched myself down to Wall Street.
Without any kind of financial degree.
No, that's true.
And you sold yourself and your idea to Bear Stearns.
I did. I said, look, there's $9 billion in New York alone from schools and cities. I think that I can make it happen. and they hired me. Which was really kind of exciting and frightening at the same time. I had to give up my pension. People thought I was crazy. But I just knew that there had to be a better way. I think even as a child, I was always taught, you know, there are better ways, and what can you do to give back? My parents mm-hmm. always gave back, and well, was there a way I could make it better?
So did you have to really dig in and learn a lot about the financial markets when you moved onto Wall Street?
I think that I always cared about finance. I was always interested in finance. I was always investing as much as I could to help support me and my children. So I bought myself a Wall Street dictionary and I subscribed to the Wall Street Journal, and I started reading and learning about Wall Street. And if I was in a meeting and didn't know what they were talking about, I would sort of write on my hand the terms and then run in the bathroom and look up the words until I really learned what was going on. But the base of it all was, how do we make it better? How do we make sure investing is safer, better, and better return? So it was really the putting together of the whole program and putting the pieces together that made sense.
Yeah, and it sounds like since the age of five, your whole idea, purpose has been to help and make things better. So you took that to Bear Stearns, you grew that, and then what happened?
So yeah, I grew that, and I then ended up going to MBIA, another company, and grew that. I went from state to state. We grew that to 17 different states, working with the states and the treasurers and the schools and the municipalities, grew that to about $30 billion, and then also made some acquisitions and did some equity investing and other investing. Did that for many years also, for almost 15 years. Hmm.
So a big shift there, Francie, but still a focus on helping.
Yes.
Okay. And then at some point you stepped back, and wasn't it a friend that you said introduced you to the idea of sustainable investing?
Yeah. So after I did, I left MBIA, and the program was called CLASS. It's still in existence, but they didn't need me anymore. Everybody there was running it fine. And so I went to do other things, alternative investments and other investments. And there was a friend who introduced me to understand about the UN principles of responsible investing and other sustainable investing ideas. And so I became very invested and interested in something like that. It seemed to fit who I was and what was happening.
Yeah, I read an article in the Washington Post from last Tuesday about the United Nations Development Goals for 2030, which I think speak to this a lot. It was about some business leaders that were working to encourage private investment in the goals, which were to catalyze greater investment for developing countries to make net zero carbon emissions and sustainability the core of everyone's policies and business models. So does that kind of sum up what sustainability investing is about, or is there more to it that you can explain to us?
Okay, so we could talk a little bit about sustainable investing and really go back to the 1700s.
The 1700s.
Yeah, when the Quakers and actually the Methodists came up with some policies around not investing in slave trade and also in firearms. So it's nothing new to look at how are you responsible and how do you think about investing, but you can trace it back to a very long time ago. Hmm. And then I think probably in the 60s, the Vietnam War, there was a lot of talk about people not investing in napalm and companies that invest in napalm. There was the beginning of mutual funds, and there were actually mutual funds based on buying companies that are responsible. We then had the UN Global Compact in 2004, where they got together 50 of the largest financial companies in the world to really put together what are your principles for being responsible. And they formed the PRI, Principles for Responsible Investing. There's now, I think, 3,100 companies signed up to that. So you can see that there's been a change over time of looking at when you invest, are you investing in something that's responsible? Is it sustainable? Does it have impact in the world? That process, I think, today is so exciting because now we have big data, artificial intelligence. We can, social media, we can take a company and break it down into 200-300 measures of how they're performing, both socially, both governance, both environmentally. We have a whole different way now of looking at companies and what they're doing and how to be responsible or sustainable.
So I'm curious, I know back in like the 2000s, you know, when the environmental movement was starting to get we became more aware of it. I did try to make some investments in quote green companies, but it didn't seem like their return on investment was as good. Right. Has that changed?
So there's different ways of investing. So there's impact investing. If you really care about making an impact, you don't care so much about your return, but you care about making an impact. There's philanthropy investing where you don't make it, you give money, you don't expect anything in return. And then there's other layers of investing where socially responsible, where you really care about social change. But I think if you want to make a return, then you really look at the sustainable and the ESG. You want ESG factors put into what you're going to do, because ESG can quantify exactly what it is that the company is doing. And most of the research, there's hundreds of different research projects and papers that will show you that a company that does the right thing in many ways, and we can define right thing in many different ways, you will outperform other companies.
To break down ESG for the listeners.
Yes. Yeah, and there's lots of buzzwords, you know. There's KYI, which is know your investment. But ESG is environment, social, and governance.
So the environment is obvious. The social would be what?
So you can look at socially how well the DNA, do they consider corporate ethical factors? Are they involved in their community? On the environment, you know, the carbon footprint, their pollution, wastewater, safe. And then you can look on the governance and do they have safe working conditions? Do they have positive relationships with their clients and their board? Do they have an independent board? So you can look at so many different ways that a company functions in all those different areas.
And that's the kind of thing that you would ask your financial advisor about or have a discussion about your particular values. Is that right?
Right. You would say, yeah, I think for all of us today, we have to think about what we care about. So what do you care about? You said you wanted to invest in something green. Mm-hmm. Can you just say what you meant by that?
Well, that would be the environmental stuff. So like maybe the low carbon footprint or the fuel cells that are going to be with the wind turbines and the electrical cars and those kinds of things.
Right. So there was a point at which you might have wanted to do that, but we weren't able to see, okay, is one of those using too much water? Are they putting waste in the environment? So now we can really look at, yes, they might be green, they might be developing, but are they completely looking at all the different parts of, are they using too much water to grow it? Are they dumping chemicals in the environment? So you can really analyze a company today because of all the big data, because of everything that's out there available.
So for instance, my investments are with Fidelity funds and some stocks. So if I work with Fidelity to manage my funds, you're saying that they would take the time to go through my portfolio and look at how these different companies, or is that kind of more of a boutique firm that would take the time to look at that?
I think you can ask Fidelity, how do they look at your investments? Do they use a database on their managers to see how they're functioning? Do they have a mission and values statement? Do they do negative screens to screen out things that you might not want? Or do they use the highest ESG scores? I think, you know, how do they monitor what you have? If you say to Fidelity, this is what I care about, then you have every right to ask them, do they monitor your funds in that way?
Okay. So this past weekend, I was with some friends and I was telling them about you being on the show and what we were going to talk about. And one of them said, well, can I tell my financial firm that I don't want to invest in any political candidates that don't support what I support? Is that too granular? Are you able to do that?
I think that's very granular. I think you could look at if that political candidate has a company and what that company does. But I don't think we're looking at companies. We're not looking at individual investors.
Yeah. And yet, I think there is money that gets funneled from companies to lobbyists and to special interest groups. And I guess that would be part of the value discussion. I don't want money to go to lobbyists that are working, you know, to keep the coal industry going, say, if I don't support that.
Right. So you would look at a company, not necessarily as a lobbyist, but you would look at a company and you would be able to, if you have a good ESG data provider, to see where that company gives money. And if you don't want to invest in a company that gives money to something you don't believe in, then you have the right not to invest in that company and to know that.
I can just imagine that some of the conversations that some of our listeners might have with their financial firms might be going, oh my gosh, this is a lot of work for me as the financial advisor.
I think you need to ask your financial advisor, do they care about ESG? Do they care about sustainability? And I just think it's happening more and more. It's like an explosion. I think I said it's like popcorn. It's just, you cannot turn on the television, you cannot look at a newspaper without seeing issues about climate control and sustainable investing and all the different ways companies are functioning. I mean, if you're a company today and you do something, look what's happening with Facebook right now. I mean, there was a whistleblower, all kinds of governance issues. Now, 20, 30 years ago, would a governance issue affect a stock price like it does now? No.
No, probably not.
No, and it's out there. Everyone can see it. And I think when you look at all the data you can get on a company, you can look at their momentum and you can better predict how they're going to perform in the future. Because what is their governance structure? Do they have a board that is independent, or do they have people on the board that all know each other for years and pat each other on the back and give themselves pay raises every year? You can look at so many things. I think it was recently, was it Target, that on social media it learned that they were using plastic for baby items and food. And I think that they made a statement that they were going to go away from plastic and go into glass, but it turns out they hadn't done it yet. So because of social media and everyone paying attention and looking at them, they have changed that. So I think you're going to see, with all that data, with all that transparency, with all the news, that you can much better predict how well a company is going to do in the future.
Yeah, and that's great to have that kind of visibility. I wanted to share the survey results, Francie, because several people participated in that, more than several. So I want them to see what the results were and then maybe have you review that with us just a little bit. So we started with, if you were given $1,000 to invest, how much would you put into a sustainable investment? And what do you think about these results? How would you interpret that?
So I see that 0 to 10% would not put into sustainable. Is that correct?
They would put up to 10% of their $1,000.
Right. Yeah. And then So I think if you look at that, you can see that many people are going to put more money into a sustainable investment. I think the key is to understand if they are thinking of their entire portfolio to want it sustainable and to look at it as a whole portfolio, or whether they just want to have a piece of their portfolio into a sustainable investment. And I think this shows that of the survey, some people would put a bunch of their money into sustainable and then more than that would not. So I think people need more education.
Yeah, yeah, because I think there was concern about the return.
I think people are afraid in the past, if you put your money into something sustainable, responsible, you were not making money, you were doing something to create impact. I think today that with all the way we are looking at companies and the way they're performing, you will do better with a company that scores highly on the ESG factors.
So the next question on this had to do with what of these factors would affect the stock price. And it looks like across the board, people felt most of them would.
Right. All of them. That's why I put them down, because I think all of them are important. It looks like the most important to the people that responded is risk management and ethics and corporate governance. So that really tells you a lot about how people think about how a company performs and how they create good corporate governance. Do they have diversity in their management? Do they pay their people fairly? Do they have a good relationship with their unions if they have a union? So it looks like from this that people really care about the way a company conducts themselves.
Yeah. And then the final question had to do with how much they knew about their portfolio.
I think the answer was most of them think they know what's in their portfolio. Mm-hmm. I think the question is, they may know what's in there, but do they really know it broken down according to what their values are, what they believe in, what they care about, and how sustainable or responsible are their investments?
Yeah, yeah. So Kathy has a question, Francie. She says, first of all, she's going to meet with her financial planner tomorrow, so she's excited about being able to ask about their ESG scores. But her question is, can we ask about board governance with respect to diversity and gender equity on their boards?
And her question was, can we ask about it?
Yeah.
Of course, we should ask about it.
Okay. And I guess
that, you know, what you don't want to do is throw out any company that does not have the diversity you would like, but look at the companies that have the right momentum. What's their policy? What are they looking for? How are they going to plan to bring on diversity? I think in the past, most when you wanted to do sustainable or responsible investing, you would kind of throw out those companies that didn't have what you wanted. I think today you need to look at those companies that are thoughtful about it, that are planning for it, and will eventually, and if you're happy with the way they are planning and going forward, to really think about that.
Okay. So don't just throw them out. Pay attention to kind of their vision, their mission, and where they might be going to get to that.
I mean, you can throw them out if you completely disagree with what they're doing.
Sure.
But you also take a look at what they plan to do and how they're doing it. And then how do they stack up against their peers, companies in their category? I think that's another thing to look at.
Okay. And Amy asks, what's the best way for someone to get started with a sustainable investing?
Number one is to think about what you care about. What's important to you? And that's how I would start. I would then talk to a financial advisor about what you believe in. And then I would see if they could come back to you with some ideas that would match what it is you feel is important to you.
So let's think about Hey Boomer for a minute. You know, we are trying to encourage people to be involved, to make a difference, to have active lives into our 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. So is it possible to look at companies that support continuing to employ the older generation or working with mentoring people that are, you know, over 65?
Right. I think that's great.
Yeah. So you can ask about that as well.
Yeah, you can certainly ask about that. And there are companies who will foster that. So yes, I think, again, you can get pretty granular with some of the ideas or things that you care about.
Now, you work with companies primarily that are looking to invest and manage their portfolios based on their missions and values. Is that right?
So I work with I work with some healthcare organizations and other organizations that are really looking at their mission and their values, and then being sure that what they invest in matches that. I work with some pensions and endowments that are looking to be sure that their portfolios look at environment and the social and the governance issues in what they invest in.
Hmm. Yeah, that must be some long, engaged conversations, I would think, to get to that.
It's pretty exciting because I think we live in a time where we can look at that. It's no longer this black box of, you know, companies that all you look at is their bottom line and their ratios and their financial performance. Now able to, because of all the data we have and transparency, really look into the DNA of how they function and what they're about.
And I was reading somewhere that because of the pandemic, that it has focused investors more on this ESG, environmental, social, and governance thought process. Have you found that with some of the clients that you're working with?
Absolutely. I think even when the market crashed or had its downturn in 2008 and 2009, I think people realized that the market doesn't always have their best interests at heart. And I think that started people thinking more about what to do and how to do it. And then I think the pandemic, look at the companies that survived well. They were well managed. They took care of their people. So you can look at the companies that did well, and you can look at how they really scored in terms of ESG. And they're the sustainable. Who's sustainable? Who's made it?
So let me ask you how this is fulfilling your need to be a helper, to be able to give back. How's your work helping you with that?
I think it's helping me work with people to see what they care about and to express that in finance. I think finance is changing. So it's really exciting for me at this point in my life and my career to be able to do something I really care about. I think one of the things that bothered me in the past was working in finance where it was all about just make money, mm-hmm. and not really take a look at how it affects the people that work there, the people that it affects. And I think now I can really make a difference by trying to help people pay attention to what they're doing, how it affects our economy, our future, our children, our planet going forward.
Yeah, and that is a big part of who you are. Here's another question. It says, how important is it for boomers or anyone to have a financial planner? And if you don't have one, how do you get started? And how much money do you need to work with a financial advisor? So it's three questions in one.
Okay. The first question was, how to get started?
Well, do you recommend that we have a financial advisor as opposed to me just having Fidelity?
You know, that all depends on who you are. There are some people who love to do it themselves. So they'll get one of the make your own investments online, and that's fine too. And then there are people who want some advice from someone. So I think that, again, depends on who you are and what you're looking for. I mean, you can go and sign up and buy some mutual funds, and you can look at the ones that are described as what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Is it one that focuses on the better environment? Is it a mutual fund that focuses on housing or whatever it is you care about? So I think it goes up to the individual. And I think if you're going to use an advisor, then you need to find someone who understands where you're coming from. So you need to ask them the questions as to what do they believe? Do they feel what you believe in is important? Do they have the ability to screen investments the way you want to see them? And I think any amount of money is worth investing.
Okay. All right. Martha asks, I've set up some small 529s for grandkids for their future education needs. What are some good ways to show them that I'm trying to be environmentally astute, focusing on their future?
I think 529s are great, by the way. That's what I've done for all my grandchildren. I think it's a little difficult to find out exactly what's in your 529s. It depends on the plan that you've chosen. So I think, again, that's a question to ask whoever runs the 529, how much attention they pay to those issues.
Yeah. And that's just a part of your investment strategy, the 529s. Right. Yeah. So here's another question that came up in conversation. It has to do with Tesla, which, you know, we like that it's a electric car company and, you know, seems to be producing a lot of cars now. But there was a question about their expense to profit ratio. I think that's how you say it, which was like 400% difference. So it's not just looking at, is this a good company because they're making electric cars? You've got to look at the whole package, right?
Exactly. So you've got it. That's what ESG is, right? It's the whole package. What's governance? Tesla had a lot of issues with governance and how well they were running and what they were doing. And that came out and affected the stock price greatly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's exactly the way to look at companies these days. Not only have they come up with something great, the electric cars, but also how well run are they?
Yeah. And that's another question to ask your advisors, because we may not be able to dig into that. Maybe.
But there's so much data available that it's out there.
Yeah. So Steve says there's been a great deal of advertising about investing in precious metals. Some companies claim they are sustainable. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you better find that out, because there's in mining, for I think that there's a lot of environmental issues with most of the mining companies. So I think, again, if you want to invest in precious metals, I think you need to find out what company you're investing in and how do they stack up on the environmental and governance issues?
Yeah, the environment and the safety issues, I would think, too.
Safety, exactly. That's a big issue.
Yeah. And then Kathy says, I once asked my financial planner to sit down with my two sons when they were 12 and 14. So to give the Finance 101 talk, it was such an exciting session. One of my sons was really engaged. The other could care less. So how do you have that kind of conversation with your, even your adult children? I mean, because most of us are with adult children now. How do you have this kind of conversation with your adults?
A big issue. I think financial literacy is a problem. I think I just read the other day that Generation Z is the most financially illiterate in terms of investing.
Really?
Yeah, I think there are programs. I know the state treasurers are making it one of their main goals is to provide financial literacy to the people in the states. I know a bunch of the banks run programs, but it's as far as I know, it's not taught very much in schools.
Oh, I don't think it is.
It's really a situation, if as a parent, if you can find a way to expose your child, they're so much better off going forward.
Yeah, and I can see this as a conversation over Thanksgiving dinner when I'm with my kids to say, you know, hey, have you thought about sustainable investing?
Right.
Yeah, because right now they're focused on investing to have enough to send their kids to college, you know, and
right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a great discussion to have because there's no reason not to do sustainable investments because the research is showing the returns are better. Companies can get better borrowing costs. There's so many more pluses to investing in companies that are sustainable.
It's fascinating, Francia.
Pretty exciting times.
It is pretty exciting to see that we're becoming more astute and aware. And like you said, big data and artificial intelligence is making all of this so much more possible.
Right.
So if, you know, Hey Boomer is about educating and, like I said, intelligent conversations, but it's also to motivate boomers to live fully engaged life, to make good decisions. So what would be two or three takeaways you would want to leave with the audience today?
I think one, the Department of Education in this country was formed in 1979. And I got a poster at that date, which I look at all the time. And it says, learning never ends. Mm. And I think that's one of my pieces of advice is learning never ends. Learn something new every day. It really keeps you alive and involved. I think another is take a stand in what you believe in. You know, if you believe in something, then live it. Take a stand in it. And I think the third one is one that my mother always talked about, which is the echo. So what you call out into the world will come back to you. So I think that's something to keep in mind. So those, I guess those are my three takeaways.
Those are beautiful takeaways. Ah, thank you so much for what you shared. I do want to let people know how they can find you. So the Investment Office Resources website, IORLLC.com, would have a contact button on there that you can reach out to Francie and ask her any additional questions that we might not have been able to cover, or, you know, direct her to some companies that you're working with that might want to make some different decisions about their investments. So it's IORLLC.com to contact Francie. Thank you. What a great discussion.
Thank you. Thanks for all the great questions.
I know. Don't we have a great audience?
Yeah.
So they do ask great questions.
I'll try to respond to anybody.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Well, let me tell you about who's coming next week to be our guest. His name is Harold Shapiro. And Harold is a professional photographer and a musician. And he was about to open an exhibit of fine art pictures in March of 2020. And then, of course, we know what happened then, the pandemic, everything was shut down. In fact, the exhibit was up and ready to go. So he had to pivot, and he pivoted to what he calls crisis creativity. And some of that involved music, but it also involved every day since the shutdown, Harold's posted a photograph to Facebook. And the photographs are not just your typical photographs. They are definitely works of art. So join me next week to learn more about this crisis creativity and what Harold's doing now that we're starting to open up a little bit. And I just want to thank you all for tuning in and for the great questions. I want to thank you, Francie, for what you've done. Thanks for the show. It says to Francie and her advice, learning never ends. Take a stand and echo. We're getting great comments. Thank you. And help me grow the audience. Again, send people to the website, heyboomer.biz. Ask them to subscribe. Then they can know about all of the upcoming shows and events. I just want to remind everybody that we are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. And my name is Wendy Green with Francie Heller, and this has been Hey Boomer.